black thing go from left to right, and I thought, I'm gonna die out here. No one's ever gonna know.
I couldn't believe what my eyeballs were showing me. I'll never forget how evil the eyes were. It was horrible. I mean, I've never seen nothing that evil.
It ran towards me at a rate that I can't even explain. Turned and stared at me, and this look of, I just want to kill you. I want to say it was human, but it wasn't.
He was yelling at me to grab a gun, grab a gun. I was like, for what? He said, just grab a gun. And there's footprints all the way to the door of my house. It had went inside my garage all the way to the door.
911, what are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better...
Sir?
See ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
You're listening to Sasquatch Chronicles. Check us out online at sasquatchchronicles.com. If you've had an encounter, email me. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Got a great show planned for you. Have two guests coming up. My first guest, actually, he owns this property in Mississippi, and he's been hunting it for some time. He's had two sightings, and one of the sightings, he was actually looking through the scope, had a headshot on one of these creatures. Does a great job at describing what he saw. And then my second guest will be talking about encounters he's had. I had to invite him to the show. We were talking about Clinch Mountain on a previous show, and it was brought up a couple times in the past. This Clinch Mountain, it's a mountain range in the United States. It's I believe it's between Tennessee and Virginia, and a lot of people have encounters up there, a lot of aggressive encounters. And so I invited the second guest to come on. Didn't necessarily have a sighting, but had a lot of strange experiences up there. And he also talks about his grandmother. Very interesting stuff. You have to pay close attention to what his grandmother said as she was in her 80s, what was going on around the property. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And if you get a chance, check out the website, sasquatchchronicles.com. If you're looking for any Bigfoot gear, there's a shop at the top. You can go check out some of the gear. You can also become a member, get additional shows. But I really appreciate you guys being here tonight. I want to give out a couple shout-outs this evening. I want to give a shout-out to Des R., who's out in the UK. And I'm very humbled by the email. It means a world to me because, you know, I like I've always said, I'm not the star of this show. It's always the guest that comes on. You could take me out, plug in whoever, and it would be a successful show. It's not me. Who is the star of the show? It's the guests that come on, but I'm very humbled by this email. It was sent to me on the 23rd of January, and Des R says he's from the UK. He says, "Well, Wes, I've thanked you before for how your show has helped me as my mom has been fighting a losing battle with type 2 cancer, and I want to thank you again today." And we've just been recently told she only has a few days left to live. I can listen to your show and escape from the hell I'm going through for an hour or so at least. I know you probably won't read this, but I wanted to say a massive thank you because it does help me forget about my problems. Cheers, mate. Cheers, mate, to you. Cheers to you, Des. Thank you so much. I did get your email. I did read your email. And I know on the 26th she passed, and my heart goes out to you. It really does. And she's in a better place than fighting cancer. Cancer is, F cancer. I don't even know what to say to that. But thank you again. It's very humbling to get an email like that from someone. Thank you so much. Keep your head up, Des. And hit me up with an email. Actually, I'll respond back to you. Maybe we can chat via Skype. talk about Bigfoot, talk about whatever you want to talk about. Get your mind off of the passing of your mother. But my heart goes out to you, and you have my condolences. I also want to give a shout out to Sharon Kay. She said, new listener, can't get enough of your show and podcast. Thank you, Sharon, for listening to the show. I really do appreciate it. The next shout out goes to Bridget in Australia. And this was sent by Justin. Justin says, well, hi, Wes. First of all, let me say I love the show. I don't mean to be rude, but I've re-listened to most episodes 4 or 5 times as I put them on at night when I'm going to bed. And I'm flat out making halfway through the first interview. Best sleep I've found. I hope the show's not making you fall asleep. But anyway, the whole point of the email, it's a long email, but he says, Bridget's birthday is coming up on St. Patrick's Day, March 17th. It would be an absolute cracker if you could throw her, as I mentioned on your show, anything like a big hello and happy birthday to West Australia's biggest Sasquatch Chronicle fan, Bridget. Happy birthday, old girl. And here's hoping... I won't go into it, but happy early birthday, Bridget. We share a birthday that's close to each other. I'm in February, so happy early birthday to you. Let's jump into it tonight. I want to welcome Lee to the show. Lee, thanks for coming on. Appreciate you being here.
No, thanks for having me.
And I know that you had 2 separate encounters. I remember reading them on the Sasquatch Chronicle fan page. Actually put portions of it up on the blog. If you would, let's start with the first encounter. Tell the audience what you were doing and what you ran into.
Okay. The first one happened in early January 2008. I was deer hunting. It was mid-afternoon, 4 o'clock-ish, roughly. And I was hunting on a ditch and had a green field to my right, which was about 40, 45 yards from me. And it's a thicket on the other side of the green field. I noticed a buck walking down the ditch, and he was coming towards me. And so that's all I was focusing on, because he's a pretty good buck, and I was planning on shooting him. He got about 80, 90 yards out from me, and he stopped, and he looked over to his left, which would have been my right. And I thought there might have been another deer coming into the field over there. And when I looked, I just got a few seconds, maybe 4 or 5 seconds view of this thing standing on 2 legs walking. By this time he had already made it across the little green field, and he was heading into the some woods over there. And it was reddish brown color, maybe an auburn color. At the time I wasn't thinking of Bigfoot. I was thinking, you know, somebody's down here trespassing on the land or something like that. And I turned around and deer was gone, and I kept looking back where the creature walked. And I couldn't see him anymore, but I could hear him breaking brush and going up, you know, going up the hill and going down towards the river. The thing that I just sat there in the whole rest of the afternoon just playing in my mind, what was that, you know? The thing that stuck out with me is the hair on it. I saw the right side of the creature. The hair on his arm was just dangling down, probably about 4 or 5 inches roughly. I could see his fingers on that hand. I mean, I could see his thumb and I could see fingers on the hand. And he didn't look my direction. He had something else. I think I don't know what it was, male or female, but it had something on its mind, and it was just a steady pace. It was going somewhere, and it was on, you know, had something on its mind. And it was going straight to somewhere. I don't know where it was. And it took me a few weeks to finally come to the conclusion that that was a Bigfoot, because I kept questioning my mind. Well, was that somebody? Was that a bear? No, bears don't walk that long on the back feet. And bears are not too common in this part of the state. So a couple of weeks later, after I finally convinced myself, I said, well, I'm going to go back and measure, you know, the trail that he went on. And I saw him walk by this tree, and I was going to measure this branch that was sticking out. And that branch was roughly 6 feet, 9 inches, you know, to the branch from the ground. And it was a few inches taller than that branch. So I'm guessing he was 7'6", something like that. Another thing that stuck out was when he picked his right foot up and was going to go take a step, I could actually see the sole of his foot, which was stuck out in my mind too. So it was quite interesting. I made me change the way that I thought about stuff out here in the wild. I realized that I wasn't the dominant predator anymore.
What was interesting about the sole of the foot?
I could tell where the hair stopped, and the sole of the foot on the side, it was a darker brown. I guess it was just dirt from where he was walking and stuff like that. But yeah, I could just definitely see the difference, where the hair stopped and the sole of the foot began. And that stuck out, And also, I could make out the thumb on the right hand as he was swinging his arms. The head was kind of a slight cone shape. I keep saying he. I don't know for sure if it was a male or female, but it really changed my mind. Like I said, it took me a few weeks to come to the conclusion that's what it was, especially after I went back out there with the tape measure and measured the branch that he walked by.
There's this weird thing that happens when you have an encounter. It's like it torments you. It won't leave you alone. You can't get it off your mind after you've seen something like this. You can't. It's hard to process it. When you saw this thing, how far away would you say you were from it?
Well, he was in the green field, and that green field is about 40, 45 yards from me. But I didn't see him, when the green field is probably about an acre and a half, and he covered that. I don't know how long, because like I said, I was paying attention to the buck, so I don't know how long he had been there. I just caught when the deer started looking at him. That's when I looked over there and saw it. I was like, wow, who's that? First, like I said, my first impression was somebody's trespassing on my land. Who is this? But then after I measured it, I was like, no, that was too big to be somebody, a person.
And it's interesting too, for the way the buck reacted to it. Cause I would imagine, I don't know if the buck knew you were there, but for it to look back and know, to be worried about that thing as opposed to,
right,
to where you're at.
I don't think the buck knew I was there because the wind was slightly blowing in my face.
Oh, I got you.
And he was just easing on down the ditch, just eating a little bit and coming on down the ditch, So I don't think he knew I was there, but he definitely saw that and he didn't like it and he took off running. And when the deer ran, he's crashing through the brush and everything. And that creature Sasquatch, he did not pay attention to it. He just kept his head straight forward and just walked on. He, like I said, he was on a mission to go somewhere. I don't know where.
Did that worry you at all, ever going back out on your property to hunt, knowing the same?
Well, not that one, because like I said, it was just a real quick encounter. And I didn't feel threatened at the time. During that encounter, I didn't feel threatened. Everything was kind of peaceful and kind of happened real quick and was over real quick, But after that encounter, I was a little bit more aware. I wasn't scared, but I was just more aware of maybe I'll see another one, but the chances of that, I didn't think was very good, because I know people who go out and look for them their whole lives and never see one, But I didn't think I'd ever see another one again until 2011. Now that one, the encounter in 2011, that one scared me.
Tell us what happened. Tell us what you were out doing this time and walk us into what happened.
Okay, well, it was deer season again. I'd moved my stand about 40, 50 yards on the other side of the ditch from where I had it on the previous encounter. Because deer had changed their pattern up a little bit, and they was coming across, walking down a slough on the other side of the ditch. And the river is right behind me. My tree stand was probably 15 yards from the riverbank. And so this was late December. It was after Christmas. And it was about 4 o'clock or so, 3, 4 o'clock. And it was, overcast, cloudy. And I hadn't been in the stand too terribly long, maybe 20, 30 minutes, maybe. I don't really remember. But I just saw this doe just running down this ditch. And when she got down to where the ditch meets the river, she turned and ran towards me, which I thought was kind of odd at first because the wind was blowing in that direction. And, she came and ran and she stopped. And when she stopped, she was no farther than 5-6 feet in front of my stand. And she looked directly up at me. And when I looked down at her, I could tell this doe had been run hard and run for a long time. Her tongue was hanging out. She was deep chest breathing, a little bit of foam coming out. She was tired. She'd been running a long, hard time. And she actually just laid down there after she looked at me and she looked back over her shoulder. She just laid down, which was very strange. I heard something coming down the ditch, and I said, well, maybe it's the buck been chasing her all day. And I kind of got my gun ready. And by that time I saw this, I thought it was a person again coming down the ditch. And I'm like, well, who is this? And I got to look, and I was like, holy crap, this is a big son of a gun here. And he came down the ditch. He was following that trail that the doe was in. And he came and turned right where she turned to come my direction. And this was probably about another 30 yards, 40 yards. And like I said, the wind was blowing that direction. And I guess he smelled me. As soon as he turned and the wind hit him in the face, he stopped. And I was like, holy crap, I'm looking at another one. And I had my scope on. And I'll be honest with you, I had the safety off. And I didn't want to shoot, but if he'd come my way, I'd have shot. But I had a good look with him, look at him in scope. And I know it was a male because, like I said, this son of a gun was black, turquoise gray. He was a lot bigger than the other one, a lot barrel-chested, broader shoulders, just more filled out. And when he stopped, I put the scope on his head and actually had the crosshairs right between his eyes. And he was glaring right at me, glaring right at me. And it seemed like it took forever that he was staring at me. He knew I was there. He locked in on my position. And he kind of shrugged his shoulders and kind of snarled at me a little bit. The upper lip kind of snarled and growled. I could see his teeth. And then he just glared at me a little bit more and then turned around and walked back up the ditch the way he came from. And I was shaking. I was scared to death on that encounter. Because, I mean, if he wanted to, he could have taken me out. I don't know why he did. But as he was walking back up the ditch from where he came from, I heard a growl from my left. And it was a kind of a low rumble growl that just went on for a little, you know, for several seconds. And then crashing, because there's a thicket from on my left side, probably about 100 yards, 80, 100 yards where the deer were coming out. But something was in that thicket, and I could hear it crashing through the thicket, going back up to the same direction as that other Bigfoot. And I was scared. I sat there in the tree stand till a good 30, 40 minutes scanning the area to make sure he was gone, the one on the right, because I had to go that direction to get back to the cabin, to my truck. And I ran back to my truck. That's the scariest I've ever been. And from that point on, I never go out in the woods without a weapon.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you one bit. What did the deer end up doing? At what point did it exit?
She stayed there for a few more minutes, probably about, I'm guessing, 5-10 minutes. She calmed down, and then she eased on off into the direction to the thicket. And, you know, she'd take a few steps, look at me and look back at the direction where the big old male walked back to. And then finally she just ran off, took back running, ran back up to that thicket up the river. But that one right there, that's the one that really scared me. And that's the one I really started getting into the researching online and found out that there's a lot more encounters similar to what I had.
I talked to a hunter one time. And he told me that, I can think of a couple times this has happened, encounters like this. And I think the deer, when they're in that position, or bucks, and they're running from these things, I think they look at us as a lesser of two evils. And so they'll choose the lesser of two evils. But I had a hunter one time, and I'm sure you know Mike Woolley's story, but he was up.
Oh, yes. I've seen that.
Yeah. And it sounds a lot like his. You know, they were chasing a deer. But I had a hunter one time I spoke to, and he was up in a tree stand, and he said this deer comes running right to his tree stand. Same thing, foaming from the mouth. He goes, I can tell this thing had been running. And he goes, I didn't have a real tall tree stand, so I wasn't too far up. But he goes, it came right underneath my tree stand and laid down. And he goes, it was a strange, I'd never seen that before. And he goes, a monkey stepped out of the forest, same direction the deer came from. And they made eye contact. And he goes, you know that scene in the new Planet of the Apes when the thing goes, no, yells no? He goes, that's kind of what this thing did, but it didn't yell no. He goes, it roared at him. It stood there and its whole facial expression changed and looked right at him and roared at him. And the interesting part is the deer didn't get up and run. This guy didn't leave. He was so scared. He just sat there with his gun on it. And then it turned around and left. But so you hear those types of encounters, especially with hunters, and it's interesting, and I think it can be very dangerous crossing paths when these things are hunting. But when you were looking at it through the scope, Would you describe for the audience exactly what you saw?
His eyes were a dark brown. I saw a little bit of white in the corner, but not much. They were just huge, dark, almost black eyes. And when he was staring at me, it's like he was, you know, boring a hole right through me, you know, glaring a hole right through me. Just a very cold, icy stare. His nose was kind of flat, kind of looked like a boxer that had been punched in the nose, you know, a few times, and it was big and flat. He really didn't have a lot of hair on his face. He was kind of thin. He had a little bit of hair on his cheeks, and but it maybe just a little bit on his upper lip. Lips were kind of thin, not really thick, but when he growled at me, I was able to see his teeth, his upper teeth, and they were big, blocky, kind of off-white, light brownish color. And, you know, he didn't have fangs or anything like that. They were just kind of look like ours, but bigger and, you know, like I said, like a off-white, light brown color. And the lip kind of curled up a little bit, and that's when he let out a little growl or rumble, let me know that he was not happy that I interfered with his hunt. You know, like I said, he was solid, just real solid. He was massive, a lot bigger than the first one I saw. And like I said, I had right in the scope. I looked him up and down, and it was a male. That one really scares me right now. I mean, I'll be sitting in the tree stands from now, you know, now I hunt the same place, and I'll be sitting in the tree stand, and I'm more aware of my surroundings now after that encounter. And if the birds and everything just shut up and quit, then that's when I really get an eerie feeling that one may be around. I don't know. I haven't seen any. Every once in a while I hear some kind of, it won't be too often, but I'll hear some kind of something that sounds like an owl, but it's really not an owl. You know what I'm saying? Something sounds like something is trying to mimic an owl, but it's not an owl. I've heard plenty of those. Usually that's early in the mornings, like you know, before daylight or after sunlight, sunset, when I'm walking back to the four wheeler or walking back to the truck. That's usually when I hear that strange owl light noise, but it's not very common that I haven't heard that in probably a year or so.
I'm kind of curious, when you're looking at this thing through your scope, and that's when mm-hmm. you get the best view of it, because you can zoom, you know, if you got it right center eye, you know, but you get the,
right.
the
right.
crosshairs on it, and you're looking at it. Would you say it was more of an ape? Would you say it was more of a person? How would you kind of describe what you ran into? If the term Bigfoot and Sasquatch didn't exist, what would you say you ran into?
A gorilla face with a little bit of human characteristics. That's the best way I can describe it. It half gorilla, half human face. I don't know. It he didn't have the teeth like a gorilla. You know, he had it more human like teeth. And I've gone to the zoos ever after that encounter and looked at the gorillas and watched male gorillas, and they don't quite get the facial expressions and structure as what I saw. As more like human qualities, but that's the best way I can explain it.
I've always wanted to ask someone that. I've been kind of waiting to pull that question out, because, you know, a lot of times you ask people, is it a monkey? Is it a person? And it's hard to nail that down. It's hard, really hard to explain. I was just talking to a lady earlier today, and we were talking about my own personal encounter, and I was saying, you know, they don't, I guess it's kind of a monkey, but it's not really a monkey. I mean,
right.
Even the way they walk isn't quite human, but I mean, I guess you would say human. I mean, it's kind of hard to even describe how they walk. It's
right.
It's not quite like a person, but, you know, if you're off in a distance, I could see how a hunter would go, oh, that's a guy in camo.
Right.
Until you actually get a really good look, and then you're like, I don't think that's a guy in camo.
Well, it's funny that you say that. My cousin had an encounter. He didn't start talking about it until I started questioning him, especially after the one encounter I had in 2011. I started questioning, because we hunt not the same property, but general area, you know, a few miles apart. And I asked him, I said, you ever see anything? And he kind of, you know, beat around the bush, you know, and wouldn't say anything. And I figured that he had some kind of encounter, just because usually he's pretty open And then finally I got him out of it, you know, after several times asking him, finally got out of him. He'd seen one several years before my first encounter. He was turkey hunting. It was right after daylight. And he was all, you know, nestled up against a tree and he was working a bird. And all of a sudden the bird just quit, you know, the gobbler stopped gobbling. And he sat there and he'd call a little bit and nothing happened. And all of a sudden he looked, he caught movement from his left side, he said. And he was about 50, 60 yards out. And he turned his head around and he thought it was a guy in a ghillie suit sneaking through the woods trying to get to the bird that he was working, you know, working. So he turned his head and he's got to looking at it and he stepped in the open and this thing did not have a gun with him, he said. And when he got a better look at it, it was a reddish brown color and said the wind was blowing in the direction where that thing was. And he said, as soon as that creature, he thought was a person at first, but said, as soon as that thing crossed where his scent was blowing, he said, that thing came to a dead stop half in mid stride, stopped and turned around and looked at him. And he said, he could feel it just like zero in on his position, stared at him for maybe a second or two and then turned and just hauled butt back from the direction it happened. You know, the creature came from, and he's been scared ever since then.
Yeah. And it's strange,
but he thought it was a guy in a ghillie suit.
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing is most hunters, I know there's, you know, some people who are against hunting and all that other stuff. You know, most hunters Correct. I've talked have ever run into in the woods are the coolest guys out there. And if you ever see a guy yeah. in a ghillie suit, and even if he zeroes in on where you're at or whatever, you know, a lot of hunters, they'll wave to each other, you know, like, oh, hey, I'm right. over here, you know. And so,
common courtesy, baby.
Yeah, kind of a courtesy thing. And so when that doesn't happen, you know, and for him to, for it to stop, zero in on him, and then keep going. That would terrify me, man. Have you been around the property? Have you actually taken a walk around outside of hunting and just see what you could find?
On my property that I hunt?
Yeah, that you hunt?
Yeah, I'll look, you know, walk around, especially a couple of days after rain. I can see, like, where something, you know, crossed the ditch and it was going up on the bank. But we have a lot of beavers and coons here, so I don't know if it, you know, if that's a coon or a beaver sliding up and down, you know, the ditch or anything. I found one solid footprint and, well, one and a half solid footprint, but it was right in the middle of a logging road. And it was a good print. You could see the five toes. It was deep. It's probably maybe 3/4 an inch deep in the, you know, in the mud. And I wear a size 11 boot and I didn't step in the print, but I put my boot over it. And it was larger than my boot all the way around from side to side and heel to toe. And then I found a heel print where you're going across the road and I did just a, you know, a heel. And you can see in the grass and leaves where it's front of his foot on his left foot. And then he couldn't find any more after that. I tried to save it the best I could and run to town and get some stuff to cast it. But about the nearest town with that kind of stuff is 20 miles away. So that's 40 miles round trip. And by the time I come back, it was raining and it washed the print away. So I wasn't able to cast it, unfortunately. But I covered it up with my jacket because that's all I had, hoping that would do. But unfortunately, it didn't. I did have an incident, I think it was 13, where I think I got growled at by one. But I can't be for sure. I heard some kind of low grumble growl. And then I could hear something walking in the thick woods behind me. I never did see it. And it got behind me and kind of made like a low rumble growl. Nothing what I heard on that second encounter. And then I could hear it turn around and walk off. So I don't know if that was, you know, if that was a deer, like a bug kind of growl sometime or wrong. But I don't know what that one was.
It's interesting too, like your second encounter, and I've talked about this on so many different shows, I won't bore the audience with it, but there is kind of a weird way they hunt, and it's kind of, and I've talked to witnesses who've lived on properties and have seen them do what you're describing, and what I think is happening, especially after talking to witnesses, and hunters do the same thing. They have one kind of drive the deer down the game trail, and then someone will sit and wait to ambush it, actually shoot the deer when it comes down the game trail. And you see them do this. I've talked to so many witnesses who've actually seen them do this. Did you get that impression like that one wasn't really running the deer down? It was kind of funneling it in that area. And then that growl.
That's what I have a feeling that it was doing. After my first encounter, you know, I started reading. And I always heard that, you know, read several places where there, if you saw one, that's not the one you got to worry about. It's the ones that you don't see. Because there's usually one or more in the general area. But yeah, I do believe that he was pushing and driving that doe to the other deer, other Bigfoot. Like I said, I didn't see the other one, but I heard a growl and, you know, just crashing through the thicket going up the swamp, the same direction as the other one. So I do believe that they were chasing, that one was pushing the deer down. He knew the lay of the land, you know, the ditch that, you know, that ditch that he had run down, that's a deep ditch. Creek is probably straight up and down banks, maybe 10, 12 feet. And so it'd been hard for a deer to, it's a wide ditch too, so it'd be hard for a deer to jump it or, you know, go down and come back up. And like I said, the river intersects that ditch right there. So he'd been there before. He knew the lay of the land, I do believe. And that's why he was pushing that deer that way, because he only knew that deer had one option once it hit the river. It's either go across the river or run up the river and run towards that thicket. And I do believe there was at least one more in that thicket waiting for that deer to come by.
Yeah, and I think that can be a very dangerous position to be in when you're in between it and its food. But, you know, their behavior is so interesting, and I really think they have separate personalities because you'll hear different things. Like Mike Woolley's encounter, that thing wanted to fight. The moment he pointed the rifle at it, it went nuts. It was ready to rock and roll at that point.
Right.
It calls in its buddy, and luckily he was able to get back to his truck. But you pointing the rifle at it, you see it kind of snarl and turn and walk away. And there's this debate that goes online of whether these things know what a gun is or not. I tend to think that they do know what a gun is.
I do believe they do.
Yeah.
I do believe that they watch us and they hear the, you know, we might not know they're there, but, you know, they see us shoot and see the animal drop and stuff like that. So I do believe that they know what a gun is and how deadly the weapon is. A lot of people laugh at me when I say that because they don't think that. But I do believe that they know what a firearm is, and they sense when you have one and when you don't.
How big do you think that creature was that stood out? I mean, I know you're guessing at the height, but I mean, how tall would
the second one?
Yeah.
The second one was over 8 feet. I know for sure because I went back and measured the fork in the tree and that he stood in front of, and his head was a couple inches over that. So I'm guessing 8'1", 8'2", maybe. And the tree was 19 inches in diameter, and his shoulders stuck way out on both sides. So, yeah, I 3.5 feet maybe across his shoulders. I don't know. But it was a big, big guy. I really got scared on that one. I was just shaking the whole time. Like, I wasn't shaking when it happened. I guess adrenaline was going so much. But after both of them walked and I couldn't hear him anymore, I would just start shaking. And I probably shook a good 30, 45 minutes. And when I was able to calm down a good enough, climb down safely, I calmed down and ran to the truck. I've never been that scared before.
Yeah. What do you think stopped it? What do you think stopped it from coming at you?
I really don't know why he stopped. I think they have different personalities. If he wanted to hurt me, he could really come down there and push my tree stand over because I was about 15 foot, you know, ladder stand. He could have pushed it over and done whatever he wanted to, you know, but I don't know why he didn't. I don't know why he didn't. I've talked to a couple of people from Gulf Coast Research, Bigfoot Research Project, and one guy here in Mississippi, he's with the on the TV show Killing Bigfoot, and he's had 3 reports of people being attacked by these things.
In that area where you're at?
And not this area, more southeast a little bit. There's a big national forest, kind of central part of the state. The Bigfoot in that area are kind of aggressive. I've heard several being chased out. And they're just real aggressive over there. It's 138,000 acres or something like that, national forest in that area. And they appear to be more aggressive over there.
And it's like you and I were talking about earlier with personalities. You definitely do see from one person's encounter to another's the different type of personalities. Sometimes, right. You know, I don't think that they're gentle care bearers, but I think sometimes they will leave. And then sometimes what you gotta worry is when they don't leave. I think if you'd have popped a shot off, it wouldn't have been the one you were shooting at that would have gotten you. I think it would have been the one that was
the one behind me
would have gotten you. Yeah.
I do believe that if I had come across a mother and a young, that would have been a bad situation for like a bear and her cubs. You know, that's not a good situation to be in. So I do believe that would have been in a bad situation in there. Well, but I do believe that these creatures are like people. There's people, you know, with good personalities, and there's some that are just mean as all get out. And I do believe that these creatures are the same way.
And I tend to agree with you. I think it depends on the type that you run into, first of all. And then I think it depends on the personality. You know, a gorilla can be a very gentle creature. A monkey, on the other hand, will rip your face off and eat it. Baboon isn't a big, scary animal, but a baboon will kill you quicker than a gorilla or a chimp could probably kill you in 2 seconds. So I think it really depends on the type that you run into and then the personality, what type of mood they're in. Usually when hunters run into these things, as you've probably heard on past shows, it's never a happy encounter because the hunter is the key in messing up what usually a hunt going on. And if it would have been it's interesting because if it would have been a grizzly bear, I use grizzly bear just as an example. I'm not so sure a grizzly bear would have stopped. I think if it really wanted some food and you were in between it and its food, it would have no qualms about killing you and probably wouldn't think twice if you had a gun or not. Grizzly bear probably wouldn't care twice.
I agree.
And so
these creatures are very smart. I do believe they're very smart.
Yeah,
and that's scary how smart they are.
It is scary. It is scary. You know, a lot of wildlife is intelligent. Cougar can track you for miles without you even knowing about it. Animals are, and these things are on a whole different level. What do you think that these things are? What's your own opinion on what you think they are?
I want to think they're kind of a all species of Gigantopithecus, you know, just a subspecies of a Gigantopithecus, I think, that's involved to a smaller version of that. You know, I don't think they're humans. I don't think they're a race of humans or anything like that. I think they're a species of a great ape here in North America.
Yeah, and I'm always curious what people think, especially when they get a good look at them, what they think they are, you know. And again, there's no wrong answer. It's
right.
Because no, like I always say, no one has one in their garage they're studying. So there really is no wrong answer in it. Do you still hunt? Do you still go out to that area?
Yeah, I still hunt on this place. I'm actually going to go out, not to that tree stand this afternoon, but the same area. I'm just, like I said, I'm more aware of my surroundings and more aware of the birds and squirrels. You know, when they kind of shut up and, you know, not making any noise, that's when I get nervous, and I usually just sleep then.
Yeah, I guess I already asked you that, but yeah, and you're right. As soon as the forest shuts off, that's when you got to start worrying.
It gets dead silent, and that's when I get a little nervous, and I said it ain't worth it. I'm just sleeping. I don't want to see another one. I know for that for sure.
Yeah, I don't blame you. You said you knew that one was a male. Did you see the sexual organs of the animal, or did it just appear?
Yeah.
Oh, you did.
No, I saw the organs on that one.
And forgive this next question. I don't mean to.
No.
This isn't like a joke, but was it large? Was it small?
It was large. Yeah.
Really?
It was good size.
That's interesting.
He was all man. Let's just say that.
Yeah.
He was all man.
Yeah, and some people see it, and that's why I asked. You know, some people see it. I remember there was a lady one time I was interviewing. And one had stepped across the road. She was in her car, and the thing was so tall, the window of her car came up to basically his male organ, and that's basically what she was looking at. And she, you know, she could describe it really well, which, you know, I didn't want to go too much into the description, but she could describe it real well. And then it turned and walked off, and she was describing almost identical to what you're saying. That's how she describes it, like a boxer that's had his nose broke a few times, real flat,
right,
and just busted up, and just an ugly thing. She described the teeth more more animal-like, more than human. Okay. But I've had other witnesses on that said it was very human-like. I even had a lady from Mexico that said it reminded her of chiclets. The teeth were like chiclets. And so
I can see that.
Yeah, just big square teeth. She said very human-like, but just on a larger scale.
Teeth were a lot bigger than ours, so I guess I could see where she would say a chiclet.
Yeah.
It was quite large teeth.
And what about the mouth, the structure of the jaw? Was that bigger than your normal average?
It was very squared, very large jaw, very square jaw, very well-defined jaw. That's all that's the best way I can explain it. I mean, it was square. It was solid.
Well, be
careful. I can see where there's a lot of power in those jaws, you know.
Yeah, and it's when I've asked people about the jaws before, I remember one guy said he thinks it could have fit a softball-sized ball in the thing's mouth. It was so big. It was just
probably
a big square, part, like you described, built for killing, built for eating, and could probably rip anything apart.
Oh, yeah. Crush a bone if need be. Yeah, it's quite massive.
I want to ask you one last question. When you saw the very first creature and it was walking.
The first one?
Yeah, either the first or the second one. The hands, how were the hands proportioned? Were they oversized? Were they proportioned for the body?
I would say there was a little bit bigger than, you know, proportion. I think it was a little bit large. The fingers were quite long and quite well-defined, quite large. So I think it would be, you know, if it was a person who was that size, I think it would be bigger hands than what a person would have. So, you know, I didn't see any claws or anything like that. They weren't sharp or anything like that. On the first one I saw, I could just see the hand separated, you know, and I could make out the fingers and definitely a well-defined thumb, which was, like I said, when I saw the first one, I thought it might have been somebody, you know, playing a joke on me or trespassing or something like that. But when I went back and measured the path that he took, I'm like, no, that couldn't be nobody. You know, that couldn't be a person. That had to be. That's when I finally come to the conclusion that it wasn't Bigfoot or Sasquatch. I believed in them, but I didn't think they were in this area of the state. I always thought they was in the Pacific Northwest, the Rocky Mountains, Colorado. I didn't think there was anything on this side of the Mississippi, you know, in my state. So, but it changed my way of thinking. And when I got to looking, there's a lot more reports, you know, in this, you know, down south, southeast United States than I was aware of.
They are, and they tend to be more aggressive down there than in other places.
Right. So. I've heard, you know, seen pictures of tracks around, you know, down south where they're three toes or four toes, you know. Some people believe that's inbreeding in this area, you know, low population, they inbreed in that. They said those are the ones that are more aggressive. I don't know. I've never come across any three-toed tracks. Like I said, the only track I ever found was that one that, and it was a five-toed track, but I wasn't able to cast that one. But it was a well-defined, large human-shaped footprint, very large.
Well, be careful while you're out there hunting. I would say don't hunt alone. But you know, with these things, never. I think it's, you know, it's hard to say sometimes with these things, because I've had people on the show in the past where they have been attacked, and really for no reason. I think it's more of a territorial, you're in my territory type of thing. And I have had people who have been attacked, but I think a lot of times when you're confronted with the situation, if you can back out of it, or, you know, we do this weird thing when we get in fear, and I've seen it not only in Bigfoot situations, but just people in general, when they're in complete fear, they'll freeze, and you can't tell that person's freaking out because their expressions aren't changing. They're just frozen. And I think sometimes that saves us because the creature's not really sure what you're going to do next. I mean, when he walked up and you're pointing a gun and you're looking at, you know, he doesn't know. What is he, even though you're freaking out inside and you're probably thinking, I don't really want to shoot this thing because I don't know if I can take it out.
That's the thought I had when I had him in the scope. I was like, I don't know if, you know, I shoot a bolt action and I didn't know if that was going to stop it. And then I didn't know if, you know, if I did kill it, what's the other one going to do? Is that one going to come up and charge me, attack me, kill me? I don't know. You know, so that's the thought that was running through my head, you know, because at the time when I had the crosshairs on, I didn't know there was another one back there, but I always heard that when you see one, it's not that one you got to be worried about. It's the one that you can't see. And I was in the back of my mind, like, there's got to be another one around here, but I don't know where. If he had came towards me and, you know, charged my tree stand, I would have shot. I don't know if I would have been or not. I was really scared, but I don't know if I'd have shot or not. I can't say for sure one way or the other, but like I said, the safety was off, and although I had to put my finger on trigger, but it was a terrifying experience. I can say that. I still hunt that area some, not as much as I used to, and I don't hunt till dark in that area. I get out before the sunset in that area. I don't know if it's just my experiences there, especially that last one. It just gives me a weird feeling when I go there. And I think I just go there hoping to see another one, but I really don't want to see another one. Kind of weird.
Yeah.
Weird thing.
It's not as weird as you think. Yeah, I get it. I completely get it.
I do believe these things are not the friendly forest people that some TV shows make them out to be. I don't believe they are. Some of them might be nice. I don't know. Just like people, you know, I do believe they have personalities like people, but I don't believe that, you know, going out and leaving food for them all the time, you know, or gifting, whatever they call it. I don't believe that's a good thing. You know, we have signs everywhere. Don't feed the bears. Don't feed the alligators around here. I just don't think you should leave food out there for them. These things do fine on their own. They don't need our help. And I think if they get accustomed to us giving food, then somebody, you know, that person goes on and doesn't give food anymore, and next person comes by and doesn't know anything about it, I think that thing creature might attack them, you know, for not leaving food. I don't know. I just, that's the scenarios I run in my head. That's the fear I have about people. And whenever I see them online, and, you know, they're saying, oh, we give them, you know, apples, whatever. I think that's a bad idea.
Yeah, I tend to agree. I mean, you wouldn't feed a grizzly bear that was coming around your property.
Right.
You know, you'd avoid it at all costs. You wouldn't feed out here in Washington State. You would, trust me, if you saw the cougars we have out here, you wouldn't be feeding those either. You wouldn't want them around your property. You know, like I always say, not every encounter is violent, but most encounters are not happy encounters. I don't think that these things truly want anything really to do with us. And I think they look at us as a major predator. And, you know, most people are in shock when they see them, but I think that they look at us as a predator. And it's just fascinating, the behavior. Like I said, those two could have easily have killed you, taken that deer, and no one probably would have found your body for 48 hours, or, you know, no one would have known you were, you know, so they could have easily killed you, but they didn't. And I think sometimes in those situations, and here's the way I look at it, and this is just my own personal opinion, but I think that they look at those situations and think, okay, is it worth it? Is it worth this deer? Because we can kill this guy, but he's probably going to probably take one of us with him as he's firing off his shots. And so is it worth it? And maybe that's me putting a human perspective on an animal, and I shouldn't be doing that. But
no, I can see that. I think they have rational thought, and they, you know, problem-solving creatures. I do believe that. And like I said, I do think they recognize what a gun is and how much damage it can do. I don't know if I would have killed that thing. I would have severely wounded it for sure. And then, you know, if I just wounded it, it would have just made that thing that much madder, you know.
Well, don't
make the situation worse.
Yeah. Well, my advice would be don't pull the trigger unless you absolutely have to. And if you have to shoot him, aim for that mouth. And that's where don't shoot him in the chest, because they'll. You aren't going to, well, it's a long story, but if you have to shoot it in the mouth, aim for that mouth.
The mass that thing had in his chest, the upper chest, the bullet wouldn't have done that. I shoot a 30-06, and it wouldn't have done nothing. I mean, it was just probably a flesh wound, really. I don't think it would have penetrated that far. It's as thick and as solid as this thing looked. It would have just made it mad. I mean, I don't want to shoot one unless life or death, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to shoot one. And I didn't know what he was doing or what he was going to do, because like that doe was right in front of my tree stand, you know, and I was right there between him and his food. I'm glad he walked the other way. I feel lucky that the outcome was what it was and didn't take a different stance, you know? different outcome.
Yeah, I remember.
And I do feel lucky.
Yeah, no, and I think you are. I remember an encounter, real quick, I'll tell you, of these people that were out hiking. They said, this deer comes running out of the brush and runs right up to us. And I remember one of the ladies that was telling the encounter, she was saying how I could have reached out and pet this deer. And they just thought it was the coolest thing. Like, this deer just came running up to them. And my first instinct as a hunter, I would have thought, okay, there's something wrong here. Something's not right. Because deers don't come running up to people. And this thing came running, and it was running right up, stopped right in front of the people and just stood there. And they said what came running, they heard something crashing through the forest. And I believe the lady said an ape came out of the forest and stopped and looked at the deer and then looked at them, looked back at the deer, and then turned around and went back the way it came. So thank God in some situations, I think if you're right. with a group of people or you're armed and you show that you're armed, they'll back away. Not always, but I think
Not
in
always.
Most situations they will. And you have to keep me up to date. Let me know if anything else happens out there, will you?
Oh, yeah, I definitely will. I'll you know, send you an email and let you know what's going on. Like I said, I hunt pretty much every season, you know, all the seasons, all the animals, and I'm always in the woods here. So I'm always keeping my eyes out, looking for tracks or signs or anything and everything.
Yeah, and I appreciate
always got me a good camera with me now, just in case.
There you go. There you go. But and if you
never,
have to, if,
you never
you're,
know.
If you're in a position where you don't have your gun, but you have your camera, take that camera and point it at it, because they tend to back off when you do that too as well.
Okay.
So I don't know if it's necessarily the gun or if it's just the object in your hand. They're not sure about it, I don't know. But I've had guys in the military tell me that if you're ever out there and you don't have a gun, but you have your camera, take your camera and point it at these things and they'll turn and they'll, it's the same theory as a gun. They're not really sure what it is. I mean, I've had different military people tell me different things, but,
right.
You know, be safe while you're out there. And thank you again for coming on. And please update me if anything happens.
I'll be glad to. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Lee. And next up on the show, I want to welcome Eric to the show. Eric has a property that's near Clinch Mountain there in Tennessee. Eric, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, man, no problem.
Yeah, I really appreciate you being here. It was interesting reading your email, and you were talking about Clinch Mountain out there in Tennessee. And it seems like the last couple of guests I've had on have talked about that area and running into the creatures out in that area. But your family owned a large piece of land out there. I'll kind of let you take it away if you would. Kind of talk about the area that your family owned and kind of the strange experiences that you had around that property.
My family acquired this piece of property, and the property dates back. I mean, to date the property, I mean, it's got slave walls, and even before that, there's big huge rock mounds on top of the hills where the old house used to be that were defense against the Indians. So the time when the Cherokee and the other tribes that we had here weren't so friendly, you know, this area has been settled as one of, I think it was one of the first areas in around here to be settled. So it's just got just a rich and just deep heritage. Kind of a dark past when you talk about slavery. So it's one of those places where you walk onto and you feel it. You can just imagine, you know, what all has been here and who all has been here before you. And we had, as soon as you turn into the driveway, it's a one lane road and just sparse houses down it. As soon as you turn into the driveway, you saw on the right hand side, the garden. And then my grandmother's house, and she was, I guess at the time she lived there, she was getting towards her 80s, and I would come, me and my dad would frequently, we'd come down from hunting out of the mountain, and, you know, stop in there and see her, check on her, and maybe get a cheese sandwich or something. And she mentioned one time, and I actually spoke to my dad about this tonight, just to make sure that I wasn't just misremembering things, but she stated one time that she showed me this little plastic gun that she had got at the Dollar Tree and actually painted the orange tip black because someone was getting on her porch in the middle of the night and would ring the doorbell and mess with the doorknob, knock on her doors, and she would hear, like, she knew it was people because she would hear the deep, a deep mumbling sound, and occasionally she would hear whistles. We just, a lot of my family kind of thought that she was just getting up there in age and just hearing things, but she thought that it was either people or it was paranormal. And at the time, Sasquatch had even entered the picture of even thinking about that being a thing, because it wasn't in our vocabulary. I mean, my dad and I would joke about it. We'd hear something we didn't recognize and say, oh, that's got to be Bigfoot, you know, or something we would have, oh, that's Bigfoot. It was a joke. But after listening to your show and hearing these similar things happen, it kind of clicked with me, like, you know, that can't be explained. Maybe this isn't paranormal. Maybe it's not just some kids down the street messing with her, because this isn't an area where you just go messing with people's doors at night. I mean, that's, you know, we're in East Tennessee. We are, us in Texas are right there with guns. So that's just not something that you do. So, I mean, that's kind of the first thing that happened there.
Before you go into the other items, that fascinates me, hearing stuff like that. I hear a lot of witnesses talk about this. I had a guy on the show, or he didn't come on the show, but I talked about it on a show where he said, Wes, either I have Sasquatch on my property or my place is haunted. And he goes, I think it's haunted. And I go, why do you think it's haunted? And I'm not taking anything away from anyone who believes in demons and spirits, you know, because I believe those things are real. But I was just kind of curious on why he would compare it to that. And what he would always tell me was, in the middle of the night, something, he would hear something up on his porch and it would jiggle his door handle. And every time he got up to go check on it, he would hear it run off the porch. And that was the other thing where that didn't make sense to him, because at first he thought it was a ghost, but then he's like, why am I hearing it running off the porch? And the other part that's interesting is when him and I talked, he talked about the mumbling, kind of like your grandmother talking. He said late at night, he would hear what sounded like two people with very deep voices that would mumble back and forth. And my heart always goes out to those people because, you know, like your grandmother, what do you, you know, if she's going to go buy a fake gun to try and scare someone off, you know, she wasn't, I wouldn't imagine she was losing it because she's trying to protect herself or put herself in a position to scare a potential intruder off. But I didn't mean to cut you off.
Oh, no, you're fine. She did mention she would go to the door and no one would be there. I mean, I don't know. She never said anything about hearing anything go off the porch or anything. But, I mean, let's get real. If this thing wanted to, it could reach up on the porch and mess with the door without ever really being on the porch. You know, I mean, if it's big enough, I mean, it's probably a 6-7 foot reach. And if this creature is, you know, 8 foot tall, it's got no problem reaching the door handle from standing flat footed on the ground.
Did you guys ever look around your grandmother's property just to see if you could find any footprints or just see if, you know, and I'm not talking about Sasquatch, but I mean, just say, hey, we'll take a look around the property, see if we can find out.
No, we didn't. I never did. And I know my dad never did. Of course, my dad spent a lot of time in the garden. We actually quit growing vegetables and stuff. And dad would walk back and forth in the garden and look for arrowheads. I mean, that was a common summer Saturday afternoon, as we would look for arrowheads in the garden. And we never came across any tracks or anything like that that were strange to us. People in that area, you just don't go walking around on someone else's property and messing around, because it's just not a good idea. It kind of is what it is. But no, we never did that.
And so what other strange things happened around that area?
In that area, well, I had the experience on the ATV, and dad kind of asked me tonight, you know, what are you going to talk about on this interview? And I told him, so you remember the night that I was on the four wheeler and I just came back and just got in the tent? And he said, yeah. I said, well, I won't talk about that, because, you know, me we're talking about a 12-year-old kid on an ATV, a lot of acres to ride it on. We're camped on top of the mountain, and it's just, it's a beautiful spot, and we're going turkey hunting the next morning, and I would ride the ATV all the way up until it was time to go to bed, and I would run to one end of our property and back. We had a nice logging trail, and I had done that thousands of times. I mean, it was nothing for me from the time that I was just, you know, 8 or 9 years old to be gone all day in the woods by myself. So there was nothing unusual about what I was doing. Never really had experienced anything until that last time I made the turn at the rock to come back towards camp. And I just got that sinking feeling that I wasn't alone and that something was watching me. And I went on just a split second later, and it was, I've smelled bears, I smelled about everything in those woods that could put off any kind of stench. That did not make sense to me. Why am I smelling this? The wet, dead dog that everybody's heard the description of, and it's been described, you can't articulate the way that smell smells. I went back to camp, turned the four-wheeler off. I sat with Dad by the fire for a minute, and I was in the tent. I didn't tell him what happened. I didn't want to talk about it, but that was my, like, it was just a fear and a dread that come over me that I had never felt before. Does that make sense? I didn't even lay eyes on the creature, but there was something there that had it wanted me. There's no doubt in my mind that, you know, I was there for the taking. Easy target.
That's a strange phenomenon that happens with these creatures, especially when these creatures are around. And it's something, you know, I don't go too far off into the paranormal side of it because I just have a hard time believing too much of the not that I have a hard time believing in paranormal, but with these creatures, sometimes I do. Sometimes I'm like, I don't know. But one of the strange things that happens with these sayings is people get that sense of dread for no reason. They'll get that strain, and I've talked to so many hunters, I've talked to so many hikers, I've talked to so many campers that, and the way you describe the smell, Eric, is really how a lot of people describe it. Sometimes people will describe it as terrible BO, or they'll describe it as like a wet dog or an animal that's rotting, you know, or a skunk times a thousand. That's how they'll describe it. But the one thing that's odd is, and you sound like you've been a woodsman, and you've probably come across a lot of different predators. You don't really get that with other predators. You don't get that I'm in imminent danger. You know, I've been very close to cougars, especially out here in Washington State. And I've said this on the show before, and people think I'm joking. They're like small tigers out here. I mean, they're huge out here. And I've come across them, and I've never, ever had that sort of I've been scared, don't get me wrong, but that weird sense of dread that you're talking about when you haven't even seen it. And so what was going through your mind at the time? And then now looking back, what do you think was causing that?
Well, at the time, my main goal was I need to get by the fire, because the only thing that I know that will come to a fire that will eat you is a wolf. All the other animals will go away, and we don't have wolves here. So I figured the fire was safe, and I still didn't feel safe. I had to get in the tent. But, you know, looking back and what I think it is I think it's a sixth sense that we as humans don't often experience, because we like to think of ourselves as the top of the food chain. I think these things, if they get the chance, you know, we'll take a human. We get that sixth sense of, you know, we could get eaten right now that we don't normally experience. Like a deer might experience from a bear. It might feel the same thing that we feel. It may not be paranormal, supernatural. It may just be a genetic and something that's bred into us that, yeah, you know, that's something bigger than us that can kill us and that will eat us. So, I mean, that's kind of my opinion on it.
Well, and I tend to agree with you. You might be right on that. It's something that we've lost over the ages of sitting on the couch and watching TV and, you know, getting in a car and like a mindless drone sitting in traffic for 2 hours and then going to a job for 8 hours and getting back, you know, we tend to lose. So you might be right, you know, losing that that feeling when you're out, you know, that hunter-gatherer sixth sense that we used to have. When you were ever out there hunting, did you guys ever hear anything, any sort of vocalizations or anything when you were out there?
Yeah, there was the time that I was in my tree stand, but to really explain that, I think we've got to step back here and I've got to explain that it was, I was always told as a child to don't pay attention to any noises that you hear that you can't explain, because there's a guy on the other side of the mountain who has some big safari cat for him. And I've never been able to find it. I've never been able to locate this place at all. So we'll come back to when I was, I never heard any yells that I thought that, hey, that's weird. I heard some screams and stuff, but just kind of dismissed them as a bobcat. Although I never saw a bobcat up there, you know, that could be dismissed. It was a little bit deep to be a bobcat, and what I've heard of them, that I knew for sure that was a cat. It was a little bit deeper, but there again, I just dismissed it as the big cat reserve over on the other side of the mountain, because that's what I've always been told. But I guess I was about 14. And I just started hunting apart from my dad, and he was on the other ridge, and the way that the topography laid is I was sitting in my tree stand and I was looking down the mountain into just like a cedar thicket, and I was sitting on a pretty well used deer trail. It just came up daylight. It's that about 8 o'clock. Well, it's bright enough to see everything, but the woods are still waking up. And I hear something walking across just below the rim where I can't see. And I'm thinking, well, a big mature buck he won't skyline himself. So if he's using this deer trail, then he has shown himself to everything on top of that mountain. But a lot of times they'll walk around the side of the mountain to keep their camouflage. Well, I'm thinking, okay, this is a deer. He's coming up on me. I need to get ready. And the more that I listened, the more that it quit sounding like a deer. And there was not a ch-ch-ch-ch. It was just a slow, kind of methodical, just a crunch, crunch, crunch. And I listened to it as it got closer to me. I determined that was the trespasser that had been coming over on us. And as he got directly in front of me, just in the cedar thicket, I decided to call out to him and just see what would happen. And I called out, and just about as soon as I called out, I got this, I mean, I've got chills going up and down my arms right now just thinking about it. But it was the deepest guttural growl huff that I have ever heard in my life. And it petrified me in that moment. Like, I froze. And I start running through my head on what kind of animal could this be. And this is a story that I have not told anybody but you. You're the first one to hear this story, because it just freaked me out that bad. And we sat there, and it felt like eternity, but it was probably 5 or 10 minutes. And then I hear the thing a little bit faster than he was walking before, head back down the mountain. And until he was out of earshot. And as soon as he was out of earshot, I popped off around immediately, and just to try to get the attention of my dad, because I mean, I didn't know what else to do. You know, I don't know what that thing was. I'm not, and my mind goes back to what I smelled a couple of years earlier and what I experienced a couple of years earlier. I had that same fear again, and that's not a normal fear. That's not normal. And that is the one vocalization, if you will call it that I experienced, and it stuck with me. I can hear the sound in my head today as I think about it and talk about it.
Yeah, and when you hear something like that, especially if it's from one of these creatures, you'll never forget it. You can almost I know exactly what you mean. I mean, you just never forget it. And so what happened next? You fired off the shot. Did your dad come to where you were at, or did you go to him?
Yeah, I wasn't getting down out of my tree stand. I felt semi-safe where I was at. And my dad came, and I remember after I fired the shot, like, I knew that if I was in trouble, I was to let off three rounds. But I just fired the one, mainly just out of fear and just forgetting the basics of I don't want to say safety, but woods safety. And I figured I needed to keep two of my bullets for something in case that thing came back. And I remember thinking, too, is if my dad walks over here and I tell him what I experienced, and he finds out that this is what this is about, he's never going to let me live this down. Like, this will forever be told at Thanksgivings and Christmases for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I have brothers like that.
And that's fine, you know, but that's what – so I intentionally dropped something that wouldn't allow me to get out of my tree stand. It was my tow rope for my backpack and my guns and stuff, and told him, yeah, I was going to get down, but I can't let any of my stuff down, and it's not safe, and, you know, I needed some help. He kind of poked at me and jabbed at me for that, but, you know, my dad's my best friend. You know, we went to the woods, we fished together and everything, and I'm not telling him this. You know, there's no way. There's no way I'm telling anybody this, because I'm going to be thought crazy for somebody who's going to tell me that I heard a bear and I didn't hear no bear.
No, and I hear you there. And it's one of those things, too. Most people, and you know this from being a hunter, I think most people realize this. If you're close enough to something, or even at a small distance like you were, and something starts growling at you, you're in trouble. It's not playing at that point. And rarely will something growl at you and then walk away. If it's going to growl at you, you're going to have some problems. And so I don't blame you for not getting out of your tree stand. Do you still hunt?
Oh, yeah. And that's the thing is this is, you know, at 6 years old, we had some woods behind our house at six. I stayed in the woods all the time. Like, if I wasn't in the woods, I was on the water fishing, and I'm still that way today. You know, I'm not going to let this, whatever this creature was, you know, and I believe in my heart that it probably was Sasquatch. I didn't see him, but I can't find a reasonable explanation for any of this outside of that. And I'm not going to let him keep me from doing what I love. You know, that I'm not going to live in that constant sense of fear over what might happen. So yeah, I still hunt. We, you know, there's weekends that I'm gone. If I'm not at work, I'm on the water or I'm in the woods. So yeah, I still get out.
Well, that's good. And I always tell people, just try and get back out there. Don't let these things take that away from you. The peace of being in the woods. What's interesting is that Clinch Mountain, and gosh, I don't know if it's my memory tonight, if I haven't had enough coffee or what, but I had a guest on recently, and we were talking about Clinch Mountain, and he was talking about the area over, I mean, this sounds like the same area where you're at, and he talked about having an encounter up there and hunting that area and having encounters while he's hunting in this area. And I remember, and the only reason why I remember Clinch Mountain is because it was such an odd name for a mountain. At least I hadn't heard a mountain called that. And it's in the same area that where you're at. And he had actually seen the creatures. I'll have to dig that up. I'll send it over to you. I can't remember what episode it was. And the fans will have to forgive me. They're better at it than I am. Most of them know the shows better than I do. But and I hate to say that. I feel stupid saying that. But most of the fans know the shows better than I do. But he was talking about Clinch Mountain and hunting that area and seeing these creatures in that area. And there's certain areas in there where they don't go anymore because they kept having problems. Every time they went in there, they were having problems with these things.
Also, thinking back, since you and I talked, I really went back to my memory bank and tried to come out with some little better details of things that I might have heard as a child, as a kid. And there's one part that kind of bordered our property that I was told that under no circumstances am I supposed to go there. That there's things up there and you'll disappear. Do not go up there. I don't know. I never asked any questions. I just, okay, yes, sir, yes, ma'am, type of deal. I wish I could, I really wish that I could articulate the topography the way that it sits, but there's just huge rock outcroppings on top of this mountain. And it's almost like a cave, but you can crawl way up under these rocks, and then you're in the dry. There's nothing that's going to see you. Like, that's something that I don't get with people who just refuse to believe. Is like, they say there's no way for these things to exist. We would see one. We would have a body. And I don't see that as being true, because there's so many spots where these things can get in, and you'll never see them. I mean, these are, you take the professional woodsmen of today, and there's no competition between them and the creatures themselves, because they can, I swear these things can probably disappear 10 feet from me if they really wanted to, and you'd never know they were there. I heard the argument a couple weeks ago of, we would have one, why is one not hit by a car? They've got 47 panthers in Florida, and they're losing them every day to car accidents and getting hit by cars. If there's that many Sasquatches all across the country, why aren't we hitting them with our cars? It's because these things are intelligent. I think that they're probably a little bit smarter than a big cat in Florida. I don't know. Like I said, I don't want to say anybody's telling any kind of stories when it comes to these things, because I don't see any reason why they can't exist. They've always been here. You know, you go back into the ancient history, and it's written about them. If this is a hoax, this has got to be the most elaborate hoax ever made.
It's interesting. I mean, people do. I have talked to people that have hit them with their cars. I've talked to law enforcement officers that have hit them with their cars. There was one down in Texas, and gosh, again, the audience will probably know this better than I do. It was probably 200 episodes ago, and he had actually, it was a law enforcement guy, hit one with his car, and he had to write it up as a bear, totaled the car, airbag went off, and I think he only hit the thing doing like 20 miles an hour, 25 miles an hour. He wasn't going that fast on a back road, and he struck it. But there is people that hit these things, and if people only knew the amount of people I spoke, you know, just me myself, just one person, the amount of people I speak to that have seen these things that don't come on the air, as opposed to the people like yourself who have more courage and who are willing to come on the air, I think most people would be shocked. I think they would be shocked with the amount of people who actually have seen these things, have actually hit these things with their cars. There's a famous case of one. There's an area up in, there's a place called Amboy, Washington, here in Washington State. If you blink, you'll drive right through it. There's a grocery store, there's a bar, and there used to be an old towing company there. I don't think the towing company is there anymore. But the tow truck driver hit a Sasquatch. Coming back, I think this was early 80s, he hit one, and it totaled one of his trucks. And so he had to, he turned it into the insurance and said, I hit a black bear. But he wrote up the report, and I'll have to dig up the report and put it up on the blog. The guy actually hit a Sasquatch, and he comes right out and says, I hit a Sasquatch. It was a half man, half monkey, about 8 feet tall, totaled my tow truck. And, you know, those tow trucks are huge. So there is a lot of people that see them. There's a lot of people who come on the air, and I never really, if most people get it at this point, I never mention last names, and rarely do I mention what someone does for a living. But I've had more cops on than probably most of the listeners realize. And I've had people like judges and in high positions than probably most of the audience actually realizes that are telling their stories of seeing these things. So they're definitely out there. Do you ever talk to your dad now about this subject?
Oh yeah. Like it's a very common thing in our household. Like my oldest son, he's into anything that terrifies him. He's got to know everything about it. Sasquatch terrifies him, so we got to know everything about it. And my oldest nephew, or my youngest nephew, that's what he wants to do. He wants to be a field researcher. We've taken them out to parks around here and let them look for tracks and do wood knocks and calls just to play around. And me and Dad have talked about this, and Dad actually told me a story of something that happened behind our house. He was coon hunting one night. The dog that I had, he wasn't much of a coon dog, but he would get out and he would run and he would chase things. He wasn't scared of anything. Dad quit hearing him running around one night, and he actually came up behind my dad and put his paw on the back of my dad's leg and turned towards the house, tail tucked between his legs, and the dog was ready to get out of there. And Dad mentioned something about smelling something off. So, I mean, you get stuff that happens like that that you can't explain, and it makes you think. I'm lucky enough to not have seen one because I've listened to your show and I've heard how it's impacted these people. But at the same time, I want to know what's out there. But, you know, how they say it changes your life and all that. My life was changed just from experiencing this. But if I'd have laid eyes on it, I don't know that I would have ever went back to the woods.
It definitely changes you. And I think the reason why it's life-changing for people is a simple fact of, you know, you can smell something, you can hear hear something, you can have rocks thrown at you, you can hear the roars, you can hear the whoops, and you're not in the back of your mind, you can still kind of go, well, maybe, maybe not. But once you actually see it, your eyes don't lie to you. And so once you see it and you know what it is, now when you smell that, or now when you hear these vocalizations, automatically that vision of what you saw comes back. And I think that's why it's so life-changing for people. You know, it's just one of those things, you know, some people have to see it to believe it. And I get it. I completely get it. People have to see it to believe it. But when you're up in that area and you're hunting and stuff, just be careful. You know, take the kids out.
Oh, yeah.
I understand the kids want to go out and tree knock. They see the stuff on TV, and you know, it's fun. And the kids, it's a lot of people freak out for me saying that or hearing someone talk about that. And my only key to that is, you know, it's not a bad thing to let kids know these things are out there. It's just the same thing as a cougar, same thing as a bear. It's not a bad thing to let your kids know about cougars and bears and everything else you could run into out there in the woods or potentially run into in the woods. So I can completely understand you doing that. Has there been anything else that's happened around there, around that area?
This didn't happen on the clinch, but this actually happened last week. It's a week today. We took the kids out. Towards the, this is not the area I live, so I'll give it, but the Oak Ridge area, and there's a lot of parks there, and that's where we took them to hike up through the woods and do their knocks and stuff, and we just, you know, kind of messing around. Well, last Friday, my brother-in-law and I decided we were going to take our kayaks there. We found a good little spot to get over to a place we wanted to fish, and we're starting to wrap up and go home, and He was probably 60 yards away from me down the lake, and I heard two owls go off about 150 yards into the woods. And I thought, you know, well, that's neat. And I knew that, I don't think owls, and correct me if I'm wrong, but owls usually don't hoot during the day without something spooking them, or they see something. And I thought, well, that's odd, coyote or something probably crossed their path, but just about directly in front of me up into the woods, I heard two knocks. And it wasn't a branch falling, it wasn't something like that. This was a wet wood on almost like a dead tree thing. And I eyeballed the spot where it came from, and I didn't have the sense of fear that I had whenever I had my first two experiences like that. But I was like, that's funny. Because there's reports of these animals over there. This is a federally protected, you know, this is where they make This is Oak Ridge. This is the place. This is where they make nuclear weapons. This is one of the most safeguarded places. You can't walk on that property without somebody knowing you're there. And there's a lot of it that's fenced off. You can't go past this point without having a team of security on you, questioning you. And I don't know. I can't say what it was, but I just thought that odd. I guess my senses are a little bit more heightened to it, to the odd noises, and not so dismissive of things because of that.
Well, be safe while you're out there. You know, definitely pay attention to those little things. I think those little things are the things that save us in some situations. When we stop and we listen to what our gut says. You ever talk to a police officer or guys in the military, they'll always say, trust your gut. Well, there's a reason why they say, trust your gut. Go with what your gut says, because it's that inner sense telling you you're in danger or there's trouble or something's not right here. And so, you know, be safe while you're out there. And I just can't thank you enough for coming on the show. I enjoyed hearing it. And as soon as I saw that Clinch Mountain, I had to call you because, like I said, and I'll dig up the episode. It was just a couple episodes ago. I'll send it over to you and have you check it out because I would love to see that area. I really would love to see that area, that Clinch Mountain, now that I've heard it so many times.
Well, if you want to come, you come on. I can get us on that property very easily. Like I said, my grandparents are real good friends with the people they sold it to, so there would be no trouble getting us onto the property to look around. If you want to look for the thing, that's on you. I don't particularly want to go looking for it, and because I don't want to find it. If that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it
if
does.
That makes any kind of sense.
Yeah, it's like I always say: be careful what you wish for, because you might just get your wish.
Exactly. So.
Well, Eric, I appreciate it again. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
I thank you.
And that's it for tonight, everyone. Remember, if you've had an encounter, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And if you get a chance to check out sasquatchchronicles.com, become a member, get additional shows. Until next time, everyone, have a great night. Something acquired, the lights on.